Hello, people, and welcome to another episode of the Out of Bounds podcast. We are joined by the usual cast, obviously, Cole, Joel, Sam, and after 2 weeks, we've got Abbas. There's back with us, Chelsea Drip, low haircut. He's ready to spew the agendas as usual.
No trim, no nothing.
He's a loyal Chelsea fan. Whether they're winning, whether they're smelly, whatever you want to call them, he's always representing the Chelsea boys. So I respect him.
I've made a rule. I can't get a trim until we get our first win. So,
boys, no, you can't get a trim until Enzo gets 10 wins.
That's too long, man.
He's only got three at the moment. So,
let me go for a trim for the next win.
That'll be a conversation.
I didn't want to decide to go out, but yeah, we move.
Yeah, but you know, we'll just talk about Chelsea today. But obviously, we've had another week of the Premier League, and I think one of the things we're going to focus on is Manchester United. I mean, horrible performance on the weekend against Tottenham, who did lose Harry Kane. And it's a lot of stuff where people talk about United's midfield. Do they have a striker? How would Antony is washed? Garnacho, they went from saying he deserves number 7 to he shouldn't be a starter. They're calling Ten Hag all sorts of names, Boldis, Green Goblin, that kind of stuff, innit? And it's because they beat Wolves as well earlier, but then that was another poor performance, which I believe they got lucky. Is it Wolves? Yeah, Wolves. They got lucky. It's just that Wolves are probably the worst scoring team in the league. So, I mean, what should you guys take on United from the first few games?
Who wants to go first?
I'll take it. Listen, let me be real. I said this before and I say it a lot of times. Like, last year, to start off with, Ten Hag actually didn't have that good of a season. It was just everybody around him performed badly. United away, for example, in the last, 4 or 5 years, their away record's been awful to start off with anyway. So a loss to Tottenham really isn't as much of a surprise as it came. In terms of the performances, again, same like last year, their away record was so bad. It was just a case of they were picking up wins at home and everyone around them was also pretty poor. Right now, like you said, they realistically should not be sitting on 3 points. They probably should be sitting on 1 point, if that, because Wolves last week were able to run through their midfield. There's nothing, like, don't get me wrong, my team's in the mud a bit as well, but there's no fluency when it comes to the front three. The best player, as much as I don't like the guy, Sancho, probably coming off the bench and being able to do a few little dribbles and look a bit lively. The midfield's non-existent. They made Bruno a captain, but I've got probably better leadership than he does right now. They have this hype over Champions League for Varane, but it's the first season he's probably playing Champions League whilst at United. Casemiro, look, he was... what's that Drake thing? I'm here for... what's it called? Not a long time, short time, whatever. You know what?
I'm here for a good time, not a long time.
That's Casemiro right here. He's not going to be there for 4 or 5 years being able to do well. Martinez, I like Argentina. But I don't care for Martinez. There's nothing special about him. Like, the whole situation right now is in the mud. And a lot of people say, oh, the first thing they'll turn to is the Glazers. But the Glazers, I don't care how the money is generated, they're still giving you that money to spend. And if you look at it slowly, United buy 2 or 3 players each year and spend about 150 to 200, you can say. And you don't really see any progression. So, yeah, United right now, like... they might have this global fan base. They might try to run off Ten Hag things, given. But yeah, the club's been shit for a long time. And it's just because they've got this manager that they tried to get behind, like the club unity and everything. But the reality is, I don't actually see a proper fix with them. Their best player is the one that they hate on the most, being Rashford. Again, they go off the high.
Rightfully so.
What?
That's a rightfully so.
Yeah,
what Abbas is saying is true though, but I'll add my own points after.
And like, they go off the hype of signing Real Madrid's pension players. That's literally what it is. They're signing these players who are going to claim this football state pension in about 3-4 years' time, probably either in Saudi or just retire up. So realistically, transfer targets are shit. That midfield's useless. The captain's useless. The front three are awful. And they still lack Martial. So, you guys take it away, but United really at this point, there's nothing positive to say about them except for the fact that the fans will spin it to say Ten Hag had a bad 4 or 5 games at the start and he turned it around. He didn't really. Everyone else just performed badly last year.
No, yeah. I want to piggyback off what you said. Thanks, bro. I just want to quickly piggyback off what Abbas said. Just there was one thing that he said, and what I said with my other brothers in the group chat as well, based on United and Ten Hag. There's no progression. And when last season, when Ten Hag had his difficulties, or saying, okay, cool, it's not Ten Hag's team. He needs to build his own team, innit? And you know, he's had a few transfer windows to buy his own players. And I'm looking at the talent ID. I don't get the type of player that he's looking to buy, because everyone was gassed off Ten Hag at Ajax and he was going to be playing this nice, beautiful, creative football. And when I'm seeing him play with this Man United team, I don't see no creativity. I don't see no beautiful football. I don't see the tiki-taka or the Cruyff philosophy from Ajax. Like I said this last week, if you had a spectrum of, you know, playing total football, you got Pep at this end, you got Tuchel, that's part of it, but he's more defensive possession football. And then nearer to Tuchel, you have Ten Hag. And you're saying, okay, cool, you need him to buy his players. But we start looking at players that he's brought in. He brought in Antony. He's looking smelly, real smelly. Like, he's under the lights. People need to start seeing him, like, perform. And if he doesn't, you need to start saying, okay, cool, he's a flop. Cool, Casemiro, I don't think that was his sign-in. But we're seeing Casemiro's aging. And the way they're playing, they're trying to play with these 2-3-8s. But when they play with their 2-3-8s pushed up, you got Casemiro in the midfield, 2v1, 3v1, and he can't do anything. We've seen him buy Musiala. No, sorry. Massalia, or whatever his name is, how you pronounce it. We've seen him buy Martinez. We've seen him buy Onana. We've seen him bring Weghorst on loan. And there's a pattern here. Most of the players that he's bringing in, i.e. the talent ID, he's either managed them or they've played in Holland or they're from Holland. And I don't see no style of play. I don't know what the ethos is. Do they want to play out the back? Do they want to play long ball? Because when I see them in certain games, they're still basically playing like Oli, but there's this aura around Ten Hag that he's the next Pep, or he's this type of attacking manager that's going to change it, and we need to give him time. But he has spent money, they've given him money, and the players that he's brought in and he's continuing to look to bring in, they're not great players. Like, so I'm still confused in terms of what we're waiting to see and what we're expecting. But in terms of United, they're just in a struggle. I don't know where they're going. You see teams like Arsenal, City, you see Liverpool trying to do their thing. Chelsea, even though they're bad, they're trying to build something. But you look at United, you just don't know what they're trying to build, where they're trying to go, and what their ethos is. So it's going to be a long ride back to the top for them, man.
Yeah, I want to echo what Sam and Abbas said. Like, when I look at United, yeah, honestly, like, it's honestly so boring to watch them. Like, I think we can all agree there. I just don't see no direction. I don't see no sort of philosophy at their football club. There's no sort of ethos. And it's a real shame for them, because this is Manchester United, you know, the biggest club in England. You know, we've grown up seeing them win and compete and have a style of play, have an identity. Do you know what I'm saying? But when you look at them, it's free ball football. Literally, like, there's no identity. There's no actual structure. Like, even the sign of Mason Mount, it just didn't make sense. Like, Mason Mount was not good enough to play for Chelsea as a starter. Why would a club which wants or says they want to compete for the biggest trophies, which has this legacy of being the, you know, a historic club, why would you go and buy a player and make him a starting player for a team that you have a championship aspiration? It doesn't make no sense. So for me, their transfer policy for me is very woeful. Again, Casemiro, kind of a stopgap signing, Weghorst, the likes of Malacia. Look, he's a young player, but they're just not good enough for Man United quality. And to be honest with you, it's the whole board as well. It's not only Ten Hag, but I think it's the board as well. Like, obviously, they're in a situation where they're trying to get rid of, you know, the Glazers, and obviously trying to bring in the Qataris, right? Yeah, Qataris. And yeah, obviously, it shows that they have ambition to kind of, you know, change the structure of the club, but it's gone so slow. Like United are not quick. Like, you see City, they get things done quickly. Even Newcastle, yeah, that took a bit of a time, but there was a bit of a political issue. But they got things done quickly. Like, every United seems so slow, just seems a bit regressed, and it's honestly sad. Like, for a club of their standards, like, the fact that it's been 10 years that they've been mediocre. Like, Manchester United have been 10 years of being mediocre, and you're looking at it from, like, an objective point of view. You're just trying to see where they're going to go. Like, what's the next step for them to kind of really achieve realistic success? And I can't see it. I think the next 2 years is going to be probably the same. Maybe they'll get a bit better, but for their standards, at this point of the rebuilding stage from Sir Alex, they should be winning the Premier League by now. There's no excuse. So, Yeah, it's quite pants for United, like just in all fronts. Yeah, and even Sancho as well. Like, I had high hopes for him when he came to United. I don't know if maybe he's not good enough, or maybe it's the club which is making him it's just not working out. But it's like every big player they bring in just hasn't really thrived. Apart from Robert Van Persie, but again, that was in the last year of Sir Alex Ferguson. So right now, United is just, yeah, it's not going well. It's very boring. Nothing's there.
Now, I kind of agree. And I think what is as well, yeah, is I feel like they're untouchable. So the players that you feel like will never get sold, they won't. Like, the thing is that they will never be bad enough to be sold, but they will never be good enough for them to actually compete for anything significant. Like, you look at the whole Rashford thing, and then people talk about how Rashford got back to his best last season or whatever, but then he was only good for, like, 2.5-3 months of the whole of last season. He was poor before that stretch, and he was poor after the three-month stretch. And some of the performances he even had was poor, but then when you're scoring at the level he's scoring, you can excuse it. You've got, like... I'm not going to say the play styles are similar, but I'm going to say someone like, let's say, Salah, for example. I think Salah's play style, if you talk about, when people talk about his technical ability and all that kind of stuff, might not be good enough when you're comparing him to other elite wingers, but his goals and assist output is so high that it can cover for maybe all the deficiencies he has in terms of ability. I feel like for Rashford to be a player that you can win with at the highest level, his output has to be so high that he can cover for his deficiencies and ability and his IQ, and he just doesn't do that for you. And his scenes are always on and off, on and off, on and off. And it's just one of those things that, although he's 25, I don't think he can get much better than he is now. But then he's always going to play because he will never be poor enough to be, well, the whole fan base to say he should be out or for Ten Hag to get rid of him. Same with Bruno as well. I mean, I said at the beginning of the season about United's midfield issue with Mount, Casemiro and Bruno. I feel like the midfield are so unbalanced. There's nobody in that midfield that can control a game. Like, they'll be better off having... he's not better. I'm not going to say he's better than, but if we had like a Jorginho United midfield, someone that keeps the ball ticking and whatever, United's midfield will be instantly better because of the balance. And I've seen Casemiro win at the highest level, and I've also seen Mason Mount win at the highest level when we won the Champions League. I can't say the same for Bruno. I think if there's anyone out of the front three that is going to be replaced, more than likely, it might just have to be him, because it's one of those, I don't know the name for it, but you know when something just goes smoothly and then if you take something out, it could either get worse or could get better. I feel like that's the situation with Bruno. It's that kind of risk that United might have to take. And if they get worse for it, cool, but it could also be a thing where they get much better for it. But I don't feel like they can reach a stage where they start challenging for the Premier League where Rashford and
Bruno... Hear me out on that one. If you take out Bruno, you've now basically... Because at the end of the day, remember, Bruno is the new captain. So if you take him out, you've now dropped Harry Maguire, who was your previous captain. You've now may drop Bruno Fernandes, who's your captain. Like, if anything, that then goes on the manager for picking a poor captain. And that's another thing that will feed into United and what is happening with United in terms of the whole idea that it's a chaos. Now, if you're dropping your captain or you're looking to sell on your captain, like, what does that show overall as your club? Like, where are you at where you can't even have stability with your captain? Like, for example, for Chelsea, we made Reece James our captain because Azpilicueta left. But the only problem with Reece James right now is his injuries. Otherwise, if he was there, he's starting constantly and there's no issues about him being a captain. Whereas if you look at Bruno, if you're saying that Bruno could be the guy that can potentially be sold or dropped or whatever like that, but you can't drop your captain, sure.
Well, like, obviously, that's not going to do it. Like, and they won't do it, but I'm saying is one of the issues that I feel like it should have been fixed before you even gave him captaincy. Because, I mean, you look at the numbers and people start trying to put him into conversations with players like Frank Lampard because of, like, sometimes he can score 18 Premier League goals in a season or whatever. But then that's what I said, is like the level at United are now, maybe if they finish in the top four or whatever, is the maximum they could reach. I said you could probably remove Bruno, United could probably get worse for it. But as I said, it's also the same thing, United could get better for it as well. And it's not even just them two as well. You look at the whole thing with how people now always hot and cold with Luke Shaw. One day he's the best left back in the Premier League. The next day he shouldn't be here. Wan-Bissaka as well. He went from almost being told by Ten Hag that he doesn't have a place in this team to now being the starting right back for United again. And it's one of those. I saw a tweet that said something about how Onana solved one issue, but it kind of exposed like other issues as well in terms of like, because when you start playing from like, some players just don't want the ball in certain parts of the pitch, and then you also got the Anthony issue as well. Like that, he's just crap, no ability. But like as a winger, he's not quick. He can't dribble. No right foot. I don't know what he offers at the moment. And then you've got Sancho, which his fall from grace is actually sad to see. So, but then how many times do you want to? Obviously, you're going to have to keep rebuilding to get it right. But it's like you improve one season, but you never actually close the gap of being champions. Because always one time Liverpool overtake you and they'll be close to City. Arsenal overtake you and they'll be close to City. Chelsea overtake you, they'll be close to City. They've never really been the ones to be the second best. Like the time United finished second, they're always like 19 points away from Man City. So I don't know. It's just one of those things. I'm not being a believer of this United's makeup, and I don't think I'm overreacting by saying it because it's just two games. I feel like this is who they are, and it's going to continue to show up throughout the season.
But one thing there, Richard, that's why you, like when it comes to football, you have to have good people in higher positions that understand football and know the right decisions to make. Because you've seen in the last few years, the teams that have prospered in the Premier League have had director of football, and they've basically there's a hierarchy structure, and they're saying, cool, this is the type of play that we want to buy, and these are the player profiles that fit the style of play that we want to do. We see it with Brighton. They're able to plug and play different players. And this is why I don't want to go back to, like, with Ten Hag, when people say, oh, Ten Hag needs his players to kind of adapt. Like, when Pep first came, Pep didn't have these players, but he still made the players that he had adapt to how he wanted to play. Yes, they finished third, but we had, you know, Gael Clichy, Sagna, Kolarov playing centre-back and playing out of the back. We've seen De Zerbi. He came in, took Potter's team, exerted his type of style of play. Then we've seen Ange come in, and we've seen Tottenham playing with, you know, that Pep style where you build up with a two and a three in midfield, and then you've got the five attacking players doing what they want to do. So I think what Man United need is they need a director of football that has a style of play that he wants the manager to play and which the manager can implement, and he can help identify certain players. And then, you know, there might be one or two sign-ins that Ten Hag can make on his own. Because don't get me wrong, Pep makes a lot of the sign-ins, but he has help from the higher up. He has Chicky that's going to help him. He has Serrano in terms of, okay, financial. This money that we've got, before we want to spend this, we need to get this going out. And then there's a type of player that they know Pep wants. You know, you look at it, you look at Kovacic, he wasn't wanted at Chelsea, and then he comes to City and he fits right in. He's there, fits like a glove, and he's sitting in the pocket with Rodri, and then he's even driving and getting into the free eight and having creativity up there, which you didn't see at Chelsea. And then now it looks like we're going to get Jeremy Doku, and I'm actually happy for that because I haven't seen pace on the wings like since Sane and Sterling. And I think us having Doku just gives us another threat in terms of directness and whatnot. But yeah, I just think they need a director of football that can kind of identify players and help them.
All right. Agree with everything. Switching over to the Blues side, as you said, another defeat for... fuck's sake. Another defeat for Chelsea. I mean, I saw a stat that say is now 5 wins in the last 31. It was crazy. I saw another stat that said apparently we haven't scored. I don't know how true this is. I probably need to fact check this, but we haven't scored a goal at home in the Premier League since I should probably cap, but he's not since the Dortmund game at home and stuff. And
what do you mean?
The Champions League.
Oh.
And stuff, and I can't remember. I'm sure we have scored at home, but it's like,
what, in the Champions League or in general?
No, we have scored at home. We scored against Newcastle
last week.
We scored last week. That's
cap. I think I saw the stat wrong, but it was something to do with our goal scoring that was very poor. But nevertheless, I think it's another game, and as I said, that we have failed to win. Now, one thing I will say without, because I don't want to overreact, I'll say there are a lot of games we watched last season, whereas in with Potter and then Frank Lampard, whereas in we didn't win the games and the performance were absolutely diabolical. Like, you could not see any pattern of play. The defense was shambles. But I feel like yesterday, especially in the first half against West Ham, we were by far the better team. And I felt like Sterling seemed that he was turning back the years a bit. Chukwuemeka, Carney, he was playing really well. I think Enzo, not that he was as good as he was against Liverpool last week, but he was controlling, he was doing well. And Jackson as well. I mean, as always, occupying defenders, linking up play and whatever. But then, especially after since Enzo missed that penalty, everything just went downhill from there. And it's just a thing, is this where Chelsea are now? Or because, as I said, 5 wins in the last 31. I mean, there must be some tree. Like, no matter who we sign, where we play. One player that I will say is pissing me off. Is it De Sarsi, whatever his name is? I can't say his name, but it's a disaster. But yeah. he makes you want Fofana and Badiashile back so quick, because Liverpool, I don't think he was that great. And then yesterday as well, poor. But not just him, as I said, is there a thing where it's in, this is where Chelsea are, or just like a mid-table team? Or have you seen enough from the first few games to be like, you know, there's hope that the project is still being worked on?
Nah, you see, Rich, like, I see where you're coming from, yeah, but the way I look at it with Chelsea, okay, in two ways, yeah. With Chelsea, the football has been good. Like, it's never been a question of how well can we play or our style of play. The football has been good. Like, the first half, we dominated West Ham, we controlled the game, we really should have been up. I mean, it's unfortunate not to be leading at half time. But with Chelsea, for me, the two common denominators which are contributing to our failure is one, we're not clinical, and we don't have a proven goal scorer in our team, yeah? And the goal scoring is going to continue to be a thing unless that ain't addressed. Now, obviously, Nkunku's out probably until, what, November, December, so we're kind of screwing that department. Nico Jackson, obviously, he's showing good signs and whatnot. You know, he's fast, he makes good runs in behind, he can drop the shoulder, he's got good link-up play and whatnot. But at the end of the day, as an attacking player, we just care about you scoring the goals. Do you know what I'm saying? Mm. Mudryk, for me, shot of confidence. You could even say maybe he's a flop. Like, let's be very real, man. The guy's gonna
probably won it,
and that was his cameo against Liverpool. And that's about it, bro. I'm being very honest. Sterling had a good game yesterday, but I don't know if Sterling, for me, is going to be the goal scorer that we need. Because for me, I don't think he has that in him no more. I don't think it's the same Sterling that we've seen from Man City or whatnot. I think he's kind of has gone down a bit. But obviously, I'll give him a shot. He played ball yesterday. Yeah, just the goal scorer's not there. Like, until you get the goal scorers, bro, this whole team are not going to win games. Secondly, defensively, I think we're not even that great. Cole, for me, I'm not going to rip into him because he's young, innit, and he's his first season playing that sort of level. But I don't understand why we're relying on a guy who didn't play over 20 games for Brighton in the Premier League last season, and you're teaming up, you're partnering with 39-year-old centre-back with Thiago Silva. Let's be real here, yeah? Thiago Silva's a legend, yeah? We all know he's a legend and whatnot. And obviously, yeah, he won us a Champions League. He was there in that season. Fair enough. But he's not the same player he is. Let's be very real. Why is he starting?
Because he's our best centre-back by some distance.
No, but he's... What do you say?
He's our best centre-back by some distance.
Yeah, but he's not good enough to be starting for Chelsea. He's not... Chelsea wants to really be the team of competing for the Premier League, Thiago Silva at this stage is not the guy.
I can't fully agree with, because I'm telling you,
you disagree with that?
Yes, because I don't believe there's five centre-backs in the Premier League that's better than Thiago Silva.
I can name five.
I mean, you can name them, but you'd be wrong.
In your opinion?
No, okay, so name the five centre-backs.
All right, cool. For me, Van Dijk is better than Thiago Silva.
I mean,
that's number one.
That's even debatable, because that's probably...
What are you saying? Currently better than him, or just pre? Because
no, currently.
Thiago Silva not the same. I love Thiago Silva, but he's still not that guy. Like, he, yeah, go on. But all right. Yeah.
So you said Van Dijk.
I'm gonna be quick with this. Yeah. All right. Cool. Van Dijk, Ruben Diaz.
I mean, I'll give Ruben Diaz. Yeah, Van Dijk. I'm not sure I'm gonna give you that one yet. But
hey, I'll be real. I've probably seen Emerick Laporte before you cut. I'll be real. Before he's going to say, Laporte, in my opinion, personally. All right, John Stones, for me, is better. That's four now.
Not really, but go on.
Who else can we go for? You know what? What's that defender?
Probably Saliba, man.
The guy used to play for Brighton at Newcastle. What's his name?
English. Burn.
Yeah, I'll say he's better than him.
This guy's just throwing out names.
No, and that proves my point. Hey, you threw out a name. You should have said Saliba, but you've said
yeah.
No,
yeah.
Just said Saliba.
Dan Byrne. If you say Dan Byrne, you better say Sven Botman.
And this is what I'm saying. It's like Thiago Silva was not the
Dan Byrne was a high profile player.
As I said,
but yeah, no. But my point still stands. Sam gets it. Thiago Silva's not that guy. He shouldn't be starting for Chelsea. Chelsea want to really kind of close the gap. Let's be very real. I was surprised that
not for sure. At a top team and your best defenders are going 38. That's wild.
It's just a number.
This ain't basketball where it's LeBron and them, man. There, even LeBron, yeah. he still had to take a step back. Like, yeah. Come on, man, you can't be relying on Thiago Silva. Come
so,
on.
Rich, you get my point. Right. You can't be relying on a 39 year old.
Yeah, I don't care about the age. If someone is playing at a high level, then
he's not playing at a high level.
He's not playing at a high. He's not playing at a high level. At 38, you're not playing at a high level.
Come on, bro. You're playing football.
No way. No way.
Look, I think when you were Chelsea, just having eyes which work, you see the two biggest problems. Yeah, simple. We can't score goals. We're not clinical, and defensively, I don't think it seems good enough. Reece James is always injured, bro. I'm scared he's gonna become injury prone player. And I love the guy, man. He's a captain of the club, but he's injury prone. How can you have four injuries in the space of a year and a half? And you're 23 years old.
Doesn't that prove your point? Because if Thiago Silva was that great, why would you be playing three at the back? Three at the back is always there to cover deficiencies at the back, right? That's why you play three at the back, because there's something wrong. So if Thiago Silva was that guy, you'll take someone out, you play two at the back, centre-back, and you have an additional forward player. You're not going to be playing, basically, in essence, five defenders, are you?
No. But I believe that the five at the back for the first three games, which I do hope it changes, I think it's more to do with the lack of holding mids that we had. Because, I mean, up until recently, where we saw Casadio and Lavia, you look at the first game, after Enzo, the next midfielder was Conor Gallagher. Would you want to play a four at the back with your two pivot being Gallagher and Enzo? That midfield is just going to get... because all Gallagher knows how to do is run, but he's defensive position.
I've seen Poch play Eric Dyer DM, though. So, yeah. I don't think Gallagher's going to be much worse.
That's what I say. Like, during preseason, we were mainly running 4-2-3-1. So, the first thing is Poch needs to go back to that. Like, I can't lie, Poch needs to actually go back to
that. I agree.
Second, like, I think, Rich, you said something, which is kind of important. You go that... we were good in the first half, and that doesn't cut it. Like I said, I did a video myself. Like in the first half, yeah, we looked really good. We looked like we were that team that we can score bags of goals or just be able to create chances. But in the second half, basically, again, with flashbacks to last year, it was basically a case of we've got no partner play. We don't really know what we're doing. I've said kind of all this anyway, but the substitutions we made, they had zero impact. It was just a case of let's make a substitution for the sake of making a sub, and we don't really know what they're going to do. This is the bit that gets me. Like, I get that we lack goal scorers, but in general, since Diego Costa, we haven't had a goal scorer.
No, but my whole point is that I also made a backup point is that we don't have goal scorers, but we're also not clinical as a team.
I hear that we're not clinical. The only problem is, This is the thing where you say, when we're not clinical as a team, that means that we don't actually have a goal scorer in general. What we're relying on is the fact that our one guy isn't the main guy to get us goals. We just need to pitch in as a team. So you have five, you've got six, you've got eight. You can have three on the side. And that is what they need. You need one guy that you know, okay, this guy Bagsman A, he needs to be the guy that's going to bag us 15 to 20 goals. Around that, you can have six, you can have eight, and that's fine. Right now, if we're not clinical as a team, what that says to me is, okay, whoever can score, if you can score, you can score this week, you can score that week, we're happy with that. What we actually, we need someone to score goals, and this is the third point for me when it came to that penalty. If KDB and Gundogan go off penalties so Haaland can bag in goals, why can't Nico Jackson be the guy that gets the ball and takes the penalty? Enzo Fernandez is not a designated penalty scorer for us. Like, he didn't take in the World Cup when Argentina had five penalties. So why is he pulling out the responsibility? Look, I like Raheem Sterling. The first thing I said about this entire year was Raheem Sterling needs to be a leader, especially for the forward line. And to be fair to him, he's done it for parts of the game, I'd say, or portions of the games, where whether it be for the first 60 minutes against Liverpool, the first 55 against West Ham, he's not doing it for the full 90. But I'm not saying every you have to play all out for the full 90 anyway. What I would have liked, if Jackson wasn't taking the penalty, I would have said, Raheem Sterling, give me the ball. I want to take that penalty. One of our forward players, go ahead and score the goal just to get it up and running. Get your goal tally up and running. That's probably the only disappointing bit. The second half, like I said, I can't believe we gave that goal away to Antonio. But after that, we played against 10 men and we just didn't know what to do. Like, we lacked pattern of play. Any sort of attacking momentum was not there. They had at one point two banks on four. I remember Enzo got the ball. He looks and he's like, what can I do with it? And it just went side to side constantly. Luckily for us, I'll say lucky, but I expect it anyway. We play Luton next week at home. If we don't win that game,
we're finished. I'm giving up.
I don't know when we win a game, because we've got a horrible period in November, I want to say. It might be like October, November, whatever it is. But this next 5-6 games, we've got 4 at home, which one is in the League Cup, and 3 are easy at home. We've got to win basically every single game, because then when we go through that stretch where we play United, City, Tottenham, Arsenal's in there as well, Brighton's in there, now that's going to be long. So if anything, like, the only expectation for now going forward is to win the games. And Poch is meant to be that guy. Like, I want performances, but I also need wins. And the goals will come. I think what Jackson does for now is pretty good, because we've not had that. But the only problem is when we give the ball up to him, yeah, he can hold it up, but then there's only so much amount of runners that are coming from it. We need to switch back to 4-2-3-1. As for Thiago Silva, look, I'm with these guys as well. The reason he can't get scapegoated at for anything is basically off an element of reputation. If we're keeping it real, like, he can make a mistake. Unless it's a glaring, open mistake, he won't get any criticism. And I understand why, because he's 39. He shouldn't actually be starting. Similar to Varane. If Varane makes a glaring, open mistake, that's the time he's going to be criticised. Otherwise, he's not going to be criticised based off his resume and what he brought when he came into United. Thiago Silva, similar. Which is fine. Like, it's football. That's how football works. A lot of people get away with it based off reputation. But, yeah, like I said, once Fofana comes back, I expect him to be a starting centre-back. But slowly, yeah, we've got to cushion our way out of having Thiago Silva as a mainstay in the starting 11. Because I don't get how you are, like I said, 38, 39, being the number one guy in the team. But, yeah, I'm not worried too much. However, if these next 4 or 5 games we're not picking up at the very least 15 out of 18 points, then it's looking a bit long, especially for the fact that City, for me, like yesterday, I mean, when they played Newcastle, they looked really nice. They only scored one goal, but they looked solid in the back. And I think that is showing where we're lacking. We're just not solid in the back. We can't be conceding early again and then having to play on the back foot. Why are we not scoring first and letting other teams attack us where we then have gaps? Like, we're playing into teams' hands at this point. But Luton, we got to win that game. We got to win it comfy.
Now, here, I just hope, because really and truly, this team is different from the one last season. It is a different manager. So I just hope that this is a thing that everything will gel in time, and this is not just who we are at the moment. Just moving on to the last topic. So, obviously, UEFA's Men Player of the Year nomination came out. Haaland and KDB were both in there, which I can't argue too much with, especially the Haaland one. I think the name that did seem to cause a bit of a stir was Messi making it, because obviously he did win the World Cup, but I believe, and there's no amount of dribbling stats or goal and assists you can put together or stuff. I don't believe that. I mean, if I look at a player like Vinny, now obviously the World Cup, like we discussed it before, like the World Cup does count for a lot and stuff in it. But I just don't believe, I feel like for PSG, especially when you're going to judge PSG, you're going to judge it by their Champions League performances, because their talent was so overwhelming that they were going to win the league anyways. I believe he failed at PSG at club level, not getting past the round of 16, poor performance against Bayern, and then all of a sudden you've got other players, other teams that accomplished more within the season, and he makes it. But do you guys believe that he was the right guy to make it, or do you believe there's someone else that should have made it over him?
This is the thing. Oh, wait, go, Sam.
Yeah, no, what I was going to say, when it comes to these individual awards, yeah, like, I've kind of got fed up with them because they become a popularity contest. Because like Richard was saying, when you base, like, top players off, like, awards, individual awards and rankings, you normally go based off league performance and Champions League because they're the competitions that you play most consistently. A World Cup comes every 4 years, yeah? Cool. So if that's the case, that means every season when or every year there's a World Cup, you don't have to perform great in the regular season, as we'll call it, like i.e. your league or the Champions League. You just need to perform for the 8 games in the World Cup and you're able to be the best player in the world. And I'm not saying Messi doesn't deserve it, but again, like I said, it's a popularity contest. Messi's beloved by a lot of people. There's a lot of nostalgia with Messi and sometimes people get clouded because, yes, he won. And, you know, yeah, yes, he won and he had a decent tournament. But if you just go based on, you know, what Mbappe did in the final and carrying them and nearly yep. won it, Mbappe should be in the conversation as well. But if because he didn't win it, you're saying, okay, we're not going to put him in. And, you know, we've seen it with different people. We've seen it with Schneider, with his situation, with Holland, where they won a treble. He got to the final, but then it wasn't based on World Cup. It went to Messi. It was based on league credentials and what he did in that calendar year. So it's like, what are we measuring it off? Like, is that there should be a rule where, okay, this is how we judge it. Because next year or another season when there's a World Cup, somebody that doesn't win it, but he's not the most popular player, he's not going to be put up for the best player. It's going to go to someone else. So I just think we just have to have some consistency and in terms of the grading.
Just before we go to Cordial, one thing I would say, just before we go to him, this is not me diminishing what the World Cup means. I understand that it's the most prestigious competition that you can go on and win. And I feel like that is why I would even allow him to be in the top 10 because he did win the World Cup. But what I would say is that if you then take the totality of everything, because at the end of the day, it's not a World Cup award, it's UEFA Player of the Year. Exactly. Which I believe it's mainly even what you do in European competitions, like, which is why I think Jorginho even won like a couple years ago because he won the Champions League, he won the Euros, and he won the Club World Cup. So if you're looking at that, and obviously I feel like Mbappe was significantly better than him over the whole year. I think Vini Jr. was significantly better than him over the whole year. And I think Rodri as well was significantly better than Messi over the whole year. So
wait. Rich, one quick thing. You know when he did the actual team of the year, Messi wasn't in the team though, wasn't he? He didn't make the team. He didn't make the cup.
No, I don't think he did. No, so...
And that's what people are saying. How can you not make the best 11, but then he's up for the best three in the world, which doesn't make sense.
Yeah, and what's even funny, because that team was made after the season ended, which the World Cup was part of. Obviously, I'm guessing it will be more of a Champions League team of the year, whatever, but it's just a bit weird to me how you feel like, because you want to include Messi, which I won't say he's not world-class but or anything, but as I said, like, that's just three names off the top of my head, I could feel like over the... And you can even argue Osimhen as well over the course of the year was significantly better, especially helping Napoli get to the semis, winning them the first league title in, I don't know how many years it was, but since the Maradona days or whatever it was. So you've got these players that do all of this stuff over the course of the year. And I repeat, the World Cup is very prestige and does hold a lot of relevance, but it cannot be the only thing that someone...
Before you go, Kojo, just to piggyback off what Rich said, we saw it in 2010 when Iniesta, I believe, they won the league and the Champions League, or they did something, and then he won the World Cup, but then he never won the Ballon d'Or, the best player. It went to Messi. So that's what I'm saying. You need to have the consistency. What are we judging it on? Is it based on if it's a World Cup year, the World Cup trumps everything, or it's based on who we like and who we prefer in our preference? But that's just my kind of 2 pence.
You go, Kojo.
I kind of keep it short and brief, innit? Just kind of like echo on Pig Bang, what Sam and even what you said, Rich. This is UEFA Men's Player of the Year award, right?
Yeah.
So that means it's based on UEFA competitions. So that's Champions League, Europa League, Conference League, and even the Euros if it was held, if it was a year of the Euros.
I think your league form comes into it as well. I think it plays a part, but...
Yeah, because your league is under UEFA anyway. It's
So your league, your domestic league, obviously it's in Europe, right? But the FIFA World Cup is not a part of it because FIFA is its own governing body and that's international. Mm. So, in a sense, the FIFA World Cup has nothing to do with UEFA, like, domestic tournaments or anything like that, or even the continental tournaments. So I think that answers itself. Messi had the great World Cup, amazing, won the, you know, won the first World Cup, great circumstances and whatnot. But like you said, Vinicius, if we're talking about like complete European football, domestically and continentally, Real Madrid obviously didn't have the best of years, you know, in La Liga, but they got semi-final. Vinicius was their star player, was better than Benzema. Mbappe, top goal scorer for PSG. Osimhen, again, top goal scorer for Napoli. Napoli got to the quarterfinals, actually. But still, that's still a good achievement for them. So, overall, yeah, it's just a bit... It's for me, I think it's just a bit of clout. It's a bit of nostalgia that Messi has been awarded in the final three for the UEFA Champions League of the Year. Because we all know this is it don't make sense. He won the World Cup, and he's getting overlooked. And players such as Vinicius, Mbappe, Osimhen, Rodri, you can even say the likes of Mohamed Salah is even more deserving. So it just doesn't make any sense for me. But again, it's football nowadays. I don't really pay attention to these awards.
This is what I'll say. Like, the first thing is I get what you lot mean, because I say this about one player, and this gets people a bit annoyed. You know, if you look at Ronaldo, the original Ronaldo, if I was to do an overall UEFA team of the Champions League, whatever, Ronaldo doesn't make that team for me, because what he did in that competition isn't of value in terms of he never won it or anything like that. But if he ever did a World 11, he's the first player that always makes it like a first ever, an ultimate World 11. He's one of the guys on the name sheet.
It's about R9?
Yeah, R9.
Okay.
So the World Cups, the goals, etc. So that's fine. Now, when it comes to Messi, I'll say this. I think the season he actually had in terms of the goals, the output and stuff was undervalued because of the fact that obviously in the Champions League, it's funny, he had 7 games in the Champions League, got 4 goals, 4 assists. It's just how early PSG got knocked out. Then you look at the league. Yeah, in the league, again, it's got 16 goals, 16 assists. We take the World Cup out of it, it was an average season by Messi standards. But for any other person, it'd still be a very solid, it would be an elite season for just overall production. Like I said, the only problem is the fact that they got knocked out so early. And it's the fashion that they got knocked out of that you won't put Messi in there. And I agree with you guys. There was players that probably performed better on UEFA stage that deserve the opportunity to be third. But you got to also remember, this is the final time he's ever going to make it. So if you ever want star power, just to give that je ne sais quoi about it, that, okay, we need to put someone in there. We can't put Ronaldo in there because he was out in Saudi. But we can throw in Messi for this one final time, and we're done. There's no little star power in Europe as much. So what's the potential? I said this before when it came to the Saudi League. UEFA will find some kind of merge to bring a Saudi League team into UEFA, and that will probably happen in the coming years. But with this one, it's more of a case of, because we have the opportunity and he meets the criteria, let's put him in for the final time. Now he's in the MLS. It's never going to happen again. That's the only reason. There's players who have probably gone further in terms of the tournament. Like I said, you could basically throw in 3 Man City players at this point.
That's when it's not fair, though.
Yeah, but that's what it is. Like, let's be honest. Because he brings that Messi cachet name, it's like, okay, our eyes are open again. And also, if we're being honest as well, if Haaland wins it, which he should do, it's a good thing for Haaland to have on his resume that he's beaten out Messi for an award. Like, if you really deep it, like, okay, cool, it's 35, 36-year-old Messi who's in the MLS and we don't think he's going to be there. But just for Haaland as well to have it, I don't believe KDB should. I think Haaland should win it myself. But for him to beat out Lionel Messi for any UEFA award is a pretty impressive thing. So you've got that. But the reality is, he still had a very elite season I'd say 99.8% of football.
But when you say he had elite season, were they just, in a sense, But I'm saying there was no memorable moments. It didn't deliver
enough. That's the thing. Okay, so you didn't have memorable moments. No, but there would have been moments.
They're meant to win Ligue 1, so that's irrelevant. And then Champions League, like I said, they went out early. When you've got Messi, Mbappe and Neymar, like, he was there for 2 years and we expected something. Yes, it wasn't the same Messi, but we still expected them to deliver or get to a final. So it's like, that's like Haaland going to Ligue 1, he scores 70 goals in whatever. He's expected, that's that league, but he's come to the Premier League, which is the hardest league. I'm not saying Haaland should win it, but I'm just saying in terms of what Messi did in Ligue 1, I'm not saying I'm not going to say it's anything special because...
And I don't disagree as well.
Oh, go on, Richard.
No, so just last week, because I will agree with Abasta said, if you want to just take... Because it was underwhelming season for Messi, by Messi's standard, but it would be a good season by, for a lot of people. I do agree with that section. What I'm saying is that even if you want to say his season was good, I just feel like there were other people that still had a better season regardless of his good season, which is why I didn't understand why he was still there.
This is the thing. You are saying a lot of players had good seasons, but that's comparative to themselves. If you what I mean is like let's use Vinny for example. Yeah, Vinny's output in terms of goals and assists was still not close to what Messi's were. That they just weren't. But when you see what Vinny was able to do compared to Vinny before, yes, it was a better season. That's my point.
I think he had the same. Really. I think he had like 46 goal contributions. Like he had like 21 goals.
He had like a 2020 season, but that's even inside the point. Because even
if that's the case, then fair enough. Like, Vinny deserves it. Like that's my point. I've just come up with it to say that just off the eye test myself. Like Messi, because of how great Messi is.
You can't be basic though with the eye test.
No. My point is because of how great Messi is, we have to now have him where not necessarily disregard, but we're like, it's a 41, 45 goal contribution. Is that really that special for him? No, he needs to be doing more, which is fair enough. I get it because he's the greatest player ever to play football. But my point is, in reality, it's still a very elite season. The only thing is, when it comes to this year, 100% they put him in more because at the end of it, it's the final time he can qualify for it. So we've got to give it a go. And then after that, we have to identify the new stars. And reality is, when you look at Europe, it's about 4 star quality names, you could say, and then the rest are just cool. We're there. I think Jude's getting there. I think Enzo's also getting there once they're able to qualify. But right now, the top 4 in Europe will probably be, in terms of star that you got to watch, is Haaland, Mbappe, KDB, and Vinny. So that's why I think Messi for this year, because it's the final time, just to give it that little bit more star quality is probably why he's in that pool as well.
I don't know, we'll see what happens. But yeah, that's all we do have time for today. So as usual, I'm going to put these guys' socials in the link below. Don't forget to like, share, subscribe, follow us on all our social media platform at @outofbounds_UK. And thank you for tuning in. Safe.